Welcome to Life Lab, hosted by David Ponder and Zach Schaefer, where we inspire listeners to live the good life through organic conversations about evergreen topics.
Life Lab captures our belief in personal evolution and a growth mindset. So,
experiment with life.
So, interesting thing happened to me the other day. You may or may not believe it, but we were out furniture shopping. Of course, at our favorite store, Miller Furniture.
Miller.
And I was looking at all the sitting style furniture, sitting apparatuses. We're talking recliners. We're talking couches. We're
talking chairs.
Everything that you can sit on, right? And I don't know what it was, but I was having this moment of, you know, thinking of the big picture, thinking of philosophy, thinking of Aristotle talking about the perfect chair. What is the perfect chair?
Nice.
And I was thinking about, well, why are there chairs in the first place? And it was like, well, it's because of the way that our bodies are built, right? We enjoy sitting on something that is off the ground based on the fact that our legs are the way they are. They bend and everything.
Yeah. Right?
And so after choosing several fine pieces that we're going to get from Miller Furniture because we're good patrons. On the drive home, it was late, you know, and I saw what looked like a shooting star, right? Kids were asleep in the back, so they were none the wiser. But this shooting star got closer, and it got brighter, right? And we went out to the Lake St. Louis Miller Furniture, and we took this country road home. So we're out in the middle of nowhere, and this shooting star just gets brighter and brighter, to the point where I can't see anything but this huge, bright light.
Damn.
And it feels like we're floating, right? Next thing you know, we are in a spaceship, and there are these aliens, and they look exactly like the typical aliens that you would see in the shows, right? They're about 3 feet tall, gray, huge eyes. And you know, they were talking to me without talking. They weren't moving their mouths. They were just... It seemed
thinking
like,
to you.
It seemed like I could tell exactly what they were saying. And they were saying, don't worry. Don't be afraid. We're not going to probe you. And I was like, okay, good. Like, they must have known I had a fear of being probed immediately.
They've been probed a lot in this past.
And then they said they were impressed by our chair technology.
Awesome.
And they wanted to know if I could bring them back some stuff from Miller Furniture.
Okay, we're gonna have to redo it.
So yes, I did. Anyway, long story short, you probably don't believe this, but I did. I brought back some chairs from Miller Furniture for these aliens.
And why is Dave talking about aliens? And Miller Furniture? Well, because Miller Furniture is our sponsor. And aliens is our topic.
We're talking about aliens today. This is a good one. This is a fun one.
Yeah, we were excited for this one. We didn't want to talk negative human stuff, so we literally get to talk about non-human stuff, which is exciting and theoretical.
I probably could have made that a little shorter, but it was fun.
No, it was fun. That was fun. I said, hey, do an intro with the Miller Furniture and aliens, and he just came up with that off the back of his hand. It was great.
All right. So, first of all, do you believe in aliens?
100%. Absolutely. And, yeah. Well, first, I think we should... Alien, to me, just means non-Earth life form.
Yeah. But any life that exists outside, on a different planet.
Yeah, exactly. And so, technically, a bacteria on a different planet is an alien.
Right.
And so when I say that, I believe whether there's little flying men that we've conditioned ourselves to think about what aliens look like through Hollywood and storytelling and movies and whatnot, I absolutely believe there is some type of life somewhere. I don't know how evolved it is, but yes, 100%. How about you?
Yeah, especially I absolutely do believe that there is life on a different planet. However simple, right? And it's just like the lowest bar possible. The lower the bar is, the more sure that I am, that it exists, right? So like some simple form of life, single cell, bacteria, whatever. Yeah. I mean, almost certainly, you know? And then as you get up farther up the chain, then I get a little bit more skeptical. Like, okay, what about as advanced as us? I still think very, very probable. And then you talk about what about so advanced that they are visiting us, you know, and then there's even ones in between there, but let's say the visiting us one, right? Then I'm more skeptical. But along those lines, like, yes. And that middle one, which is what I think most people would have the hardest time grappling with, like a civilization at least as advanced as ours,
mm-hmm.
For a couple of reasons. I think most people have trouble grappling with that concept, that there could be, and that if you look at the math, and we can talk about that later, probably is a civilization out there that is at least as advanced as ours. I think people, that's where people start to have problems.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, so there's this thing. Are you familiar with the Fermi paradox?
Yeah, but explain it.
So Enrico Fermi, a very famous physicist, asked the question, where is everybody in the universe? And it's a paradox because at the core of that question is, why have we humans not found confirmatory evidence of life on other planets, or at least life outside of Earth, with all the other habitable planets that they're able to estimate exist just within our universe, let alone other galaxies and universes that can exist. And that paradox brings in what's called the Drake equation, which is a very famous equation, where it just lays out a variety of parameters where you can get an approximation. Obviously, this is math, so it's probabilities and approximations at this level, because you can't go out into space to confirm these things. But based on the assumptions, and you know, you can get some pretty decent opportunities to think through, wow, here's the amount of potentially habitable planets. Why have we not discovered life? So that's the paradox. Mathematically speaking, there should be, but we haven't figured it out. So then there's all types of different theories out there as to why. Maybe our tools aren't sophisticated. Maybe we're looking in the wrong areas, looking for the wrong things. Maybe they don't exist. Maybe they did exist, but they got to a level of kinetic technology and killed themselves off, yeah, like people say we might do.
Yeah.
Another theory is we are the unique ones. We are the ones that got past the threshold and have moved into that advanced civilization phase where you are using lots of energy. So that's one way they try to find this life, is they search for the energy footprints that large civilizations such as ours would be making, and they can't find any. And so Tim Urban, who's a very famous internet a blogger, who just wrote his first book, but he has written a lot about this, and he views it as there's different types of civilization, if you will, and he's kind of broken this down and had a very famous blog article called The Fermi Paradox, which I encourage all of you to read because it's non-scientific jargon. It's really funny and well-written. But it's interesting because I do believe in alien life, but I don't know how advanced it is. And then the other thing, you mentioned this phrase, and people always say this. And I'm like, huh, that's an assumption we always make. Life on other planets. Well, why does it have to be on another planet? Why can't it be flying around or moving or mobile? Maybe their planet was destroyed, but they got off. Like, to me, I think the higher probability would be they're not on a planet. They're out and about transversing the highways of Intergalactica.
Yeah, I guess the reason I think that's less likely is because it would require such a level of advancement. And there are all those probabilities you talked about of them killing each other, dying off, whatever, their planet not being hospitable long enough for them to advance, that would prevent that. Michio Kaku, the physicist who's an excellent writer, I would recommend people read his stuff. He talks about type 1 civilizations, type 2 civilizations,
yeah,
and they're based on like how advanced they are. And if I remember correctly, I haven't read his stuff in a long time, and I'm just going off memory. A type 1 civilization is one that can like harness the full power of its star.
Of the planet.
So we're not even there.
No. That's type two.
Okay. So type one is
harness the power of its planet, which we're approaching.
Yeah, we're approaching type one. But if you think about it, we're not.
We're not there, but we're approaching.
I saw something like people don't realize the sheer energy in the universe. And we're like talking about it's funny because our economists and everything, oil and our, you know, financial markets, we're all dependent on this energy. And we think we're so advanced. But we're literally still – like our primary source of energy is burning dead carbon matter from life forms, plants and stuff that's under the ground. That's like our – and we've been doing it for a long time and we keep trying to come up with better ones. Obviously, we have nuclear now. But you know, a good civilization or a sufficiently advanced civilization to be, I guess, type one would be able to use all the energy that their planet produces.
Correct.
And I saw something that was just talking about solar, and it was like something like 20,000 times the amount of energy that we use as a civilization on planet Earth in a day hits the planet Earth from the sun, bounces back off into space.
Yeah.
And is lost forever. We don't capture any of that.
Right.
And so anyway, that would be a type one. A type two would be then able to
the star.
Able to harness all the energy from the sun, our closest star, which obviously is orders of magnitude more than the amount of light that hits our Earth. And then
those civilizations are capable of interstellar travel.
Yes. And then you'd have type two that can turn stars on and off and use the energy from multiple stars and stuff.
Type three is the most advanced.
Yeah.
That's where they can capture the power from the entire galaxy and know what dark matter is that makes up the majority of space and space time.
So I think that there are like declining probabilities of the of advanced civilizations based on that. And I just think it's if you did think it, do math. Like when you're talking about the Drake equation, I was reading something that talked about all the things that go into that, and it's basically saying like, yeah, there are basically infinite planets, and I'll talk about those numbers because they're huge. Like the numbers are so big that if you don't think there's life on a different planet or somewhere out in the universe, then you don't believe in probabilities. I don't know how else to say.
Yeah, but most people don't.
Most people don't. Or there's like the two points I want to talk about later are there's probably an ego part of that or a religious part of it.
We're not the center of the universe,
though. Right. And and so then the things that go into the Drake equation that are like narrowing down this probability are like, are they the right temperature, right? So if just 0.1% are the right temperature, are they the right amount of, do they have the right amount of light, 0.1%? Do they have the right chemistry? Are they of the right age since they formed to allow this advancement? So all those things, if you take them and you're like, and then that's times 0.1% and that's times 0.1%, mm-hmm. It narrows it down.
It's low.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we're talking about – so there's the math. There's the paradox. That to me is the backdrop. Like if you're really trying to think about this objectively and you remove your personal blinders or biases, whether that is your religious beliefs or just how special you personally want to feel about the human species, when you look at the math behind things, it does lead to this paradox. Like there should be – something out there, but we haven't found it yet.
Well, and I actually don't think it's that the Fermi paradox. I actually don't think it's that like puzzling. Like I think if you do the math, like so there was this good one that I thought it was good, the set of numbers, because I think numbers give everything context. And then we would say, okay, well then how applicable would the Fermi paradox be? And what this said was, and this is truly mind-blowing. So the Milky Way galaxy is the galaxy in which we live, right? If you go out to the desert and look up at the sky, you can actually see the stars stretching out and making what looks like our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy. And in the Milky Way galaxy, it is the size of the Milky Way galaxy. It's 100,000 light years across. It's in the Milky Way galaxy. They think there are I don't know the number of stars. I would hope that I had written the number of stars, but I didn't. But anyway, in the universe, The Milky Way galaxy is so big that there are billions and billions of stars. In the universe, there are 2 trillion galaxies, each with billions and billions of stars. That's why they're like, there's probably an infinite amount of planets out there that could potentially hold life. And the research that we're finding as we get, you know, with our new telescopes and everything, is starting to show that there are more planets hospitable to life likely than we ever thought there were. Mm-hmm. Right now, the current estimate is 1 in 6 stars hosts a planet that's hospitable to life. So if you just start doing that math and you think about it, the Drake equation basically says that of those stars, 1 in 6 has a planet hospitable to life. And then you start doing the Drake equation and saying, yeah, but what about 0.1% or the right temperature, 0.1%, blah, 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 chemistry. That would say that 1 in 100 million of those would have a sufficiently advanced civilization, right? Mm-hmm. And then, so if there's 1 in 100 million that have an advanced civilization equal to ours, and the average distance between stars is 4.2 light years, it would take a cube 2,000 light years across before you would have 2 of those together. Mm-hmm. So basically, on average, our closest neighbor of us that would be as advanced as us would be 2,000 light years away. With our fastest rockets, that would take us 20 million years to get there. So I don't think the Fermi equation is so puzzling, is my point.
Well, then you should go talk to all these physicists who disagree with you, Dave.
Well, I mean, I guess their point would be, yeah, but like they should be so advanced that they aren't.
I'm telling you, you should read this Tim Urban article called the Fermi Paradox. It's unbelievable. And he's got tons. He brings in the math and simplifies it, but he's got visuals. A huge part of this conversation is something called the Great Filter. Have you heard of that? Mm-mm. So that's a big part. And it's basically, there's got to be something else going on. What is it? And so people posited this, well, perhaps there's a great filter. Some event that occurs that prevents life from moving beyond it. And whether that filter is caused by the civilization itself or is caused by the laws of the universe and chemical things. And then there's all kinds of different theories around where we're at. Are we past the great filter? Is our great filter still coming? It's really, really interesting. But he gets into all the different numbers here as well. So that's basically my change challenge for folks. Anybody that's interested in really thinking through, is there alien life, extraterrestrial life? Read this article, and it's probably just a 15-minute read. It's not jargony at all. He's a great writer.
I mean, another possibility that I think about that I never hear anyone talk about is if there's a civilization that's so advanced that they can travel across the universe and basically break the laws of physics that we, as far as we're concerned, how come they couldn't make themselves unobservable to us?
Well, of course, yeah. That's one of the theories that they talk about. Another one is that why if somebody's able to travel everywhere and they run into the idea of predatory species in intergalactica, why would they want to send out signals to be like, we're here? So a lot of scientists do not like the idea of us sending out all these signals mm-hmm. into trying to find life and signal that we're here. That's a big deal. For physicists. And if you remember, we heard last year at a conference we were at, we heard a physicist, a very famous physicist named Avi Loeb, who wrote a book in 2021 called Extraterrestrial. And we'll get to that. But he talked about it's a big controversy. A lot of people do not want us signaling, hey, we're here, because they're fearful of predatory species.
It's funny, though. Like, I love the optimism of the human species. Like, we have these wild imaginations and advanced imaginations, and obviously we, you know, evolved to be afraid of predators, even though we're at the top of the food chain right now. And so our imaginations make us afraid of spiders and all and yep. stuff that we're irrationally afraid of. And we have some amazing movies, right? Like, I was going to talk about, Independence Day. Right? Talking about alien movies.
Men in Black. The locker scene at the end of the movie for Men in Black is phenomenal. It shows they open the locker and it's a whole other galaxy, and then it zooms out. And then you see that our whole galaxy is just in a marble of a big alien playing marbles. Like, I thought that even as a kid, I'm like, wow. Yep. It gave me a great perspective.
Yeah.
The Avi Loeb thing's really interesting, though.
Yeah, no, I like it. But what I guess what I was going to say is I like the optimism of people like physicists and whatnot who are just like, we're going to send signals out to the universe. And people are like, yeah, but what if somebody comes and kills us?
It's the signal that we don't
like? They won't. Right. They probably won't.
Right.
We're probably fine. I love
that. Yeah, well, and the logic, their logic is if they existed, they'd come kill us anyway.
Yeah.
But
just on the same frame, let me throw something in. I heard when they were going to start the Large Hadron Collider, the LHC, in Bern, Switzerland, and they were starting to crash stuff together, somebody did some math, and there was a really, really small probability that they would like open up a black hole and kill the whole Earth.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, but let's do it anyway. Probably not going to happen.
Oh, that's great. So in his book, it's interesting because this is not some run-of-the-mill physicist. This is the longest tenured department chair of the astronomy department in Harvard's history. This is a extremely well-accomplished physicist. He created like the Black Hole Institute. He just studies all kinds of different areas in space. Well-respected, so he's not some crackpot. And he's one of the few big-name people that is willing to study and continually want to talk about alien life. And it's like a no-no. It's taboo. It's not something you do. And that's so crazy to me that – what? Like looking up to be like, hey, we should probably learn more about whether there's other stuff out there. That's frowned upon. And so his whole book is in the last few years they found physical evidence – of this unidentified object that was going through space, and then all of a sudden it changed its direct trajectory. And so he said the phrase is, and yet it deviated. So there's all these theories about there what it is, and anybody that's trying to say it wasn't alien life, you know, they're trying to use math. But then when he says, and yet it deviated based on our math in a way that no non-man-made or civilization-made object could, like a rock, which is a big positive, a theory going through, oh, it's just a rock. There's 0% that it could have deviated in the way it did. And people do not like that. They do not like grappling with this. And so the physicists go to, well, we don't have direct evidence. It's like, what? You're scientist. Yeah.
You watched it happen.
And it's so if you really like this topic, read his book, which is called Extraterrestrial.
Hi, I'm Mark Miller, owner of Miller Furniture, your home for quality American-made furniture since 1927. I'd like to expand on Life Lab's motto, which is experiment with life, and how it relates to us as a furniture company. We're currently in our 95th year in our American furniture retail experiment. Each year, we continue to tweak and optimize what we can do for you, our valued customer. And in any experiment, you must have control groups and variables. Our control groups are, first, you must be incredibly knowledgeable about your product. And this allows you to help customers make really good home furnishing choices that they'll love for many, many years. Secondly, you must provide accurate delivery expectations when the customer is in the research and purchasing phase. And third, you must address any and all customer issues after the sale. So that's the controls. If you can't do that, you're never going to be any good at furniture retail. We've been doing this 95 years, and that is a constant, those three things. Now the fun part, the variables, things that change all the time. And I think, how can I optimize my showroom and my website so that customers love it more each and every year? Well, first, we look at different vendors. So as an independent furniture store, we have over 100 different vendors. I find new ones every single year when I go to some of the exclusive furniture markets around the country. The other important thing is these vendors, are they equipped to provide what my customers need? So do my customers want more design options or do they want faster delivery? Because there's often a weighing of that. If a vendor offers 100 different styles, how can you possibly be producing them quick enough? You know, maybe you only want to offer 10 styles and get them to the customer in 6 weeks instead of 6 months, those kinds of decisions. Product styles, those will always vary and evolve. We know that styles are cyclical and things come back over time, and we center around classic designs with strong staying power. Because when you buy a solid hickory top or solid cherry wood Amish-made table or bedroom set, most people expect that to last 20 or 30 years. So you don't want to go too trendy. But it is important to have more trendy design options so that you have some, like, right-now appeal. Other variables are in the upholstery, your living room, your fabrics, your leathers. Those things change almost seasonally, but certainly year by year, different colors are become more popular than others. We see that now with warmer neutrals coming back in style, and some of the grays and grayges that were all the rage of the past 5 years are still popular, but they're not quite where they were even 12 months ago. Now, one thing that we have is Amish-made solid wood furniture that allows us to customize the finishes. So you can make the same design look completely different just by using different wood finishes and or paints and combinations of those things. So we have looks that you just won't find in the mass-produced furniture business. Most of the furniture in this country, in the United States, is imported. The wood furniture, 88.7% of the wood furniture sold in 2019 was imported, and nearly 100% of what I show in my showrooms is American-made. So we're doing things very, very different than most furniture stores you're going to find. They don't offer custom finishes on any of that mass-produced imported stuff. Plus, they're using things like Asian hardwood, rubber wood, mango, other woods that are soft and not nearly as pretty as maple or cherry or hickory, quarter sawn oak. Anyway, those are all different, the variables. The other thing is there's design-oriented customers and there's practical use customers. So if you're going to buy a kitchen table and you want to have it and it's going to be used all the time, kids are going to do homework on it, you're going to eat breakfast and dinner there, you know, that's something you might consider doing a solid hickory top with more of a medium wood finish because, one, hickory is the hardest wood, so you're not going to dent it as often. Two, a medium to light finish is going to be more forgiving. You're not going to see all those little marks. But if you're more of a design-oriented customer and you want a sleek, dark wood with a nice, clean finish, cherry or maple is going to be the wood species, and you might do a dark finish like onyx or dark night, which has a little bit of a gray undertone. So those are all the things, and that's going to be for a more design-oriented customer. Those are all the variables that are – and there's so many more. There's an endless amount of variables in the furniture retail business. And, you know, in my brick-and-mortar operation in our three St. Louis area stores, there's one additional constraint, and that's physical size. So I am in the middle of a furniture retail experiment, and I have 48,000 square feet of usable showroom space and about the same amount of warehouse space to try to figure out what's the best mix of product for my customers. And that's the experiment that I literally do every single day and that my family's been doing for four generations. And after a while, you know, you get pretty good at that kind of stuff. So we're truly experts in our field. And with the nationwide delivery capabilities that we now have, we can bring you our amazing furniture into your home so you can enjoy it for many, many years to come and hopefully decades as well. And that's going to be on millerfurniture.com. That's M-U-E-L-L-E-R furniture.com and our specific Amish furniture website called Amish Furniture Direct USA. You can also call me directly on my personal cell phone at 618-977-8716. Ask for Mark Miller, and I will be happy to have a conversation about whatever your home furnishings needs are. Thank you so much for your time, and it is an honor to sponsor Zach and Dave here on Life Lab.
You know what? So there must be something. There must be just different types of people who react to something like that differently. Because when you talk about that, it makes the hair on my arm stand up. Like, it makes me excited to think about the possibility that of so much things that we could learn about how everything that we do. You ever like go out and look up at the stars and it's so big and you realize like all the things that we worry about in our entire life, it's just all so trivial in the grand scheme of things, right? And when you talk about there something like that, a new discovery, a discovery that would change the paradigm of the way that we think of ourselves in the universe. I just think even knowing that we're not alone would advance our civilization. It would advance our discourse. It would advance everything that we think and that we believe. It would
definitely be uniting. And so,
oh, it would be both uniting and dividing. It would destroy.
Of course, just like most things.
Like, think about what that would do. And I think this is one of the things is like, think the power structures here on Earth would be shown to be weak.
Trivial.
And obviously that's the last thing that they want, right? Mm-hmm. Is to look impotent. Religion would be thrown on its head because all those stories, none of them include the idea, you know, of advanced life forms other than them. And it like, oh, wait a minute. What does that mean about God and our relationship to God? And I all of that excites me.
It would be
me.
Uniting and dividing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild. Hearing, if you don't like to read, look up Avi, A-V-I, and then last name Loeb, L-O-E-B. He's a great speaker, really good enthusiasm and well put together and articulate and can take the very dense theoretical concepts and translate them in a way that makes it exciting and digestible for regular folks like us. How about some other, I mean, so alien movies, that's the exciting and problematic. As soon as you say aliens are extraterrestrial, literally everyone in this country goes, okay, depending how old you are. E.T., yeah. Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Alien,
the whole Alien series, Men in Black series, Independence Day.
Predator.
Anything more recent alien-wise? Oh, now I'm sure there's like cartoon alien
one
stuff.
Like, Mars Attacks.
Mars Attack, great. I just rewatched that recently. Hilarious. And the optimism you're talking about is certainly in that one. But now let's talk – there's another book I'll briefly mention, but we don't need to go into. I want to tie it in, though. One thing that's interesting about Avi Loeb's approach to studying alien life form, to trying to learn about it. Now, he could have changed since we heard him speak, but that was just last year. He is not on purpose connecting with government agencies to learn. Do you remember that? He talked about that.
Yeah, but I don't remember why.
Because he says, as soon as I do – everything, all my research is now classified. Everything I'm trying to do, I want to be unclassified. So I don't want to see anything they got. I can look up at the sky. Looking up at the sky to study the sky isn't illegal, he said. And I loved it. And he's like, I don't want to know any of that because then all of a sudden now I'm an agent of the government and I have to NDA everything. He's like, not what I want to do.
Yeah, it's nuts.
I thought that was cool.
I like that. I love that. And when you talk about that, then it brings up stuff to me. Like, what about these stories? Because when I was talking, like, I wrote belief, faith in my notes. And I was like, we have to talk about belief and faith here. And then as I got further in my notes, I'm like, but why? Like, if you do the probability of it, like, chances are there is life out there. So to me, the belief and faith thing only comes in when you talk about there being advanced life that's, you know, visiting us, and then believing some of these amazing stories that you hear, right? Like, I would recommend everyone look up the story of a guy named Commander David Fravor, F-R-A-V-O-R, who he doesn't want – and so far as I could tell, you know, you got to look into this yourselves. Didn't want anything to do with being connected to an alien story. He was the second highest guy in command on a Navy aircraft character flying F-18s out in the ocean doing some practice stuff. And – you know, they ran into this thing that they couldn't explain. It looked like a flying Tic Tac is the way that he described
UFO.
And did stuff.
Unidentified flying object.
Did stuff that they couldn't believe. Apparently, they had been tracking, like the radar people told him they had been seeing these things come and go on radar and tracking them on radar. And him and his team, like, saw this thing happen. And it's funny the way he describes it when he tells the story is he had a dread for getting back to the ship and being made
having
fun
to,
of.
And having to talk about it.
And having to explain this and all this stuff. But anyway, the reason that triggered something with me is because for some reason that video, they have video of it from the plane where they're flipping through infrared, x-ray, all the stuff. And it became declassified in the past like year or two. And so there was a lot of talk about it.
Yeah.
So do you believe in stuff like that? I mean, there's quite a bit of evidence for that one. And it's, you know, actually was declassified by our military. So,
yeah. Yeah. If you like this stuff, again, we're sharing a lot of resources. Like, check it out because it's fun to think about.
It is fun.
Another big one is a book called Unacknowledged. And there's a documentary as well. by Stephen Greer, G-R-E-E-R, a former doctor, medical doctor, who left his whole career because of the stuff he was seeing in the sky and has now built an entire nonprofit dedicated to exposing alien life form and what our government what he believes our government knows about it. But man, this book is full of some pretty interesting evidence that he believes our government and other world governments have knowledge that there is extraterrestrial life, 100% knowledge of it, but they're not sharing it, is his point. And he shares some pretty interesting things, I'll say that.
Well, that's along the lines of another one that I'll tell people to look into, Bob Lazar.
Bob Lazar.
Who claims to have worked at Area 51, Groom Lake, and worked on captured alien spaceships technology.
And had some very – there's a great documentary on that, so you can go watch that one. But why I thought that particularly was highly probable, what he was saying, is because, as Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett says, always ask where's the self-interest and financial connection in anything going on. And there was zero for him. This That's ruined right. this guy's life. It ruined his career.
He's on Joe Rogan. There's a good one on yeah. – there's a good interview of him on the Joe Rogan podcast you can listen to. There's a bunch of other stuff. But bottom line is, like, he's shied away from media attention as much as he can, and he doesn't seek it out, and I don't think he's made
any money.
He's
a dorky engineer dude and chemist type person.
And just listening to him, the conclusion I come to is, like, I don't know whether it's true or not, but it sure seems to me like he believes it's true.
Yeah, what did he have to gain from, like, if it's not true, he's literally the greatest actor in the history of humans.
Or he's completely delusional.
True. That could be an option.
Some sort of psychological problem.
But runs a super successful business.
He runs a successful business. He's a smart physicist.
I think he's a chemist.
He built like a rocket.
And that's right. Yeah, 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 yeah. You're right. A rocket car. That's right.
So anyway, he's a really smart engineer and physicist, and that's one of the reasons why they brought him there. But either he's just completely delusional and has some psychological problems, or this actually happened. Because when he talks about it, I think he believes it's true.
So. Here's what I'll say. I say this not every episode, but probably every third or fourth. Humans believe our beliefs, and we are able to find confirmatory evidence to help us argue in favor of those beliefs. Even scientists. Because science is nothing more than the accumulation of knowledge, and knowledge accumulates from asking questions. So we will ask questions that help lead us down the path that we'd like to see, and we ignore the questions that we don't want
answered. 100%. I love
that. And that even occurred big time with COVID. We saw that going on there. So for me, if I'm being very honest, I kind of want there to be extraterrestrial life. So it's like when I read all this, I'm always leaning towards like, oh, well, this was there and this was there. But again, that Tim Urban article really lays out both sides saying, well, here's all the reasons that it might not be. And it's a little, for me personally, it's a little depressing. Like if my personal thought is if the human species is the top of the intellectual pyramid in all galaxies, we're just like, look this at how it? We treat each other. Yeah. Just look at where we're at.
This is the pinnacle?
Oh, man. So I hope there's something out there where they've just gotten beyond kinetic warfare and wanting to just kill each other and be like, dude, let's work together and explore this thing. Like, what is this thing we're in? This space, this whatever. Like, let's do it.
I think that we have a desire. I know I do for the magical and the mystical. And then I ask myself, well, what does that mean? You know, are we talking about like make believe things like fairies and ghosts and things? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Some people believe in ghosts. And maybe they're – I don't even know about that. But bottom line is we have this desire for like something greater than ourselves, something bigger than anything that we know. Like there's this drive for it. And I was just thinking when we're talking about aliens, when we're talking about the potential for there to be an advanced civilization or many that are way more advanced than us, it actually – if in doing the math and stuff, it takes away the mysticism. It takes away the magic from it, thinking through it as a like, oh, actually, you know, there could be a good chance that this exists. On the flip side, it brings me back to our desire for advanced technology. We're like a beehive trying to create new and advanced technology. And
yeah.
Whenever we do see and experience new technology, for me, this most recently happened with ChatGPT and the AI stuff. It's like this new moment of discovery, this new moment of excitement, this new moment of possibility. It's on the verge of magical and mystical.
Yeah.
It's real because you can see it and touch it and interact with it and play with it. But on the flip side, like how and why, wow, and oh my God, what can this do? This can change everything, you know? And there's some desire that we have innate within us for that I think discovery of an advanced civilization would unlock. Like, it'd be like the most advanced, obviously, it'd be the most advanced technology discovery ever. It'd
and that's why the physicists who care to study these things to try to confirm whether or not there is life, they're viewing it through that lens, like awe, inspiration, a connectedness across the universe, but mostly learning. Let's learn from the technology if we can. But of course, there's tons of assumptions, you know, like the Mars Attacks movie, really, it's tongue in cheek and goofy and just cheesy at times, hilarious. However, it does a great job of calling out real caricatures that would exist.
Yeah.
The over-optimistic scientist who thinks they're here to greet us and love us. And they like cut the head off and the aliens put his head in a container. And then the overzealous military generals who just want to kill them all instant. Like, it does a really good job. And that's exactly how it would play out.
It does. And Mars Attacks is hilarious in the way that it does it. Because when I think about like the over-optimistic one, there are other movies that do decent jobs of that. Like on Independence Day, right? Like, there's people dancing on the top of the building with like welcome signs, and then they like the laser hippies explode them.
Yep.
So
that is great. Oh, another good one that I like personally, Contact with Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey and Gary Busey's brother.
That one's good.
That's a good movie.
That's a good movie.
Really thought provoking. Well, it's a good movie because it was written by Carl Sagan. It was a short story that Carl Sagan wrote, and they turned it into a movie.
That's the one where they get instructions to build
And they build two.
Secretly,
I just spoiled the movie. But yeah, they build two of these contraptions.
It's
awesome.
It is
really
a good
movie. And it's very philosophical.
Yeah, I like that one.
Well, do you have anything else?
No, I mean, it's funny. When I look at my bullets, usually I have all these things to talk about. And really the most detailed one that I had was the probability thing, where I talked about there are 2 trillion galaxies and our galaxy is 100 million light years across, and just unbelievable when you start looking at these numbers. The other things that I had were touch on religion, touch on ego, and I touched on those. Like, I don't think there's any need to go into depth about it, but just thinking through, I think it's a good thought exercise to think about what would it do to the idea of religion on Earth, every religion, every major religion, if there was this super advanced civilization that came and
it'd be interesting because they'd react differently. So it'd be just a cool thought. Obviously, they'd react differently. And different sects, S-E-C-T-S, within major religions would react differently.
So, I mean, and it depends on how much interaction we have with this advanced civilization, whether or not they just revealed some other truth to us.
Right.
Or we just became aware of them and there wasn't communication. Then I could see them being written into the religious story because you got to hang on.
Or just like how some churches with homosexuality, you know, a lot of churches are still anti that. Others have used that to beef their numbers and say, we're inclusive. Our doors are open to you.
Right.
You'd see the same thing.
You would.
We're anti-alien. Hey, aliens, you're welcome. Worship with us.
Oh, we're writing the third book of the Bible now.
Well, it'd
the
be
Old Testament, the New Testament, and now the new one with the alien.
From a social scientific perspective, it'd be wonderfully fascinating to just see how it changes different structures.
And then ego. I put ego on there because, like, you know, at this point in time, so far as we know, we are it. We are the pinnacle. We're at the top of the pyramid. And gosh, it would be refreshing to know that we're not. You know what I mean? Especially, but it opens that element of fear. Like, okay, well, now we're not.
Now we're not, and hopefully they're not predatory.
Right, exactly. Hopefully they're not predatory, but it would definitely do something to that ego piece. So
it's interesting stuff. Let me ask you this, and then obviously if you have anything else, keep going. If you could press a button, and that button would instantly release any and all known documentation, whether it's confirmatory or it's still not inconclusive, from every major world government, every agency in the world, where it instantly is just public for everyone to see on the internet across the whole globe. Would you press the button?
Yeah. But, and I think it's because my nature is somewhat – I'm somewhat of an anarchist. Like I – authority – For the sake of there being authority, I understand the usefulness of it. I understand that that could cause chaos. But to me, I think all of that, all this hiding the truth and everything is just holding back the inevitable. And it's actually preventing advancement. And I'm the type of one who I'd rather rip off the Band-Aid, yeah. Go through a period of, you know.
Nice.
Of pain or, you know, revolution or whatever it would be. Just to try to find out where we go, because I don't know. Like it's like just like the Matrix. Do you want to take the, right. the red pill or the
yeah,
blue pill?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Nice. Sweet, man. Well, anything else?
We could talk about this forever.
And right.
People do. So like if right. you're interested in this topic, just go out and check out some of the stuff that we yeah. listed in the resources. Yeah. And that'll actually be my change challenge.
Yeah. I mean, that was mine too, right? Check out Bob Lazar, check out, what was the military?
David Fravor, Commander David Fravor.
Commander David Fravor. And again, there's videos, there's articles. I highly recommend you check out Tim Urban, U-R-B-A-N, The Fermi, F-E-R-M-I Paradox. It'll take you 15 minutes to read. There's great visuals. It's really funny writing, kind of cheeky. But man, you can't not read that and be like, whoa. There's just, it lays out all the options.
We never mentioned, we live in St. Louis. There was an instance where multiple police departments saw this thing floating above their heads, and there's record of them talking back and forth on their radios. Like, do you see this thing? Yeah, I see it. Like, what in the heck is it? Like, and it was in the news. And
when was this? I don't even know about it.
Probably like early 2000s.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't remember.
Millstadt, Illinois police were talking with Cahokia police.
I wasn't sober then, so.
Anyway, interesting.
Nice. Stuff. Well, yeah. we've really spanned. The universe talking about this, we've gone from internal ego to social approaches and human structures to what's out there. We've talked about the different hypotheses, theories from both a physics and mathematical perspective, probabilities, absolutes, how it would change our conception of ourselves and our species. But at the end of the day, it's about belief, because at this point, there's no confirmatory evidence, or if it does exist, it's being suppressed. But go out there and think about it, because it is interesting, especially if you're scared of it. Like, get out there and educate yourself as much as you can. And as we like to say at Life Lab, experiment with life.